Welcome to Women Leading the Way radio show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations, and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today.
Good morning and welcome to Women Lead Radio, brought to you by Connected Women of Influence. I'm Knight Campbell, your host for The Leading Edge, women pushing boundaries in life, adventure, and leadership. Our topic today is courageous leadership with Colonel Dee Dee Halfhill, the special advisor to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, a certified executive coach who has taught women in leadership classes at Georgetown University and commanded up to 2,000 people in the Air Force. Good morning, Dee Dee.
Good morning. Thank you for having me today.
Thank you so much for joining us. What should listeners know about you?
Wow, that's a big first question. I think listening to the introduction, I think the thing that folks should know most is that I am a traveler on this path. I don't think any of us have all of the answers, and I think the more often we can come together to share the lessons we're learning, the better, and how incredibly helpful it is when we learn from one another's stories. So as that applies to me, I love sharing the stories of the lessons I've learned in the hopes that leaders who are coming up, leaders who are stepping into that arena, know they're not alone, and they know that they know that those of us who are kind of just maybe one or two steps ahead of them have learned some hard lessons and want to share as they themselves are working their way through this experience.
It's such a journey, this leadership thing that we love. I reached out to Dee Dee on LinkedIn maybe a year, maybe more than a year ago, because she's an alumna of the Georgetown coaching program, and I was working on figuring out women in leadership and what we should do as a business, and she seemed like a great connection to make. And we had this amazing conversation, so much insight there. And then I was reading Dare to Lead, one of my favorite books by Brené Brown, a month or two later, and there's Dee Dee featured in a whole chapter, and I didn't even know this about her. And I gained so much from reading that and from talking with you, and I'm just really excited to have the opportunity to hear your thoughts and share them with our listeners today. So I want to start with a quote from Brené Brown that you shared, and we can kind of pick this apart and see what the stories that you want to share about this quote are. But Brené Brown says, "A leader must spend a reasonable amount of time dealing with fears and feelings, or they will squander an unreasonable amount of time managing ineffective or unproductive behavior." What about that quote stands out for you?
Oh, goodness. I think it's the quote that guides almost everything in my life today. I've been following Brené Brown's work since about 2010, and I'd always tried to summarize it, to articulate it to an audience that maybe, you know, if you follow Brené, you know she's a social researcher, and one of the primary topics is vulnerability and shame. And trying to articulate what vulnerability and shame mean to us as leaders in a culture like the military was really hard. When I finally saw that quote, even after 8-9 years of following her, when I finally saw that quote, I thought, this is the sentence that I have been trying to convey to leaders across industries through the coaching work, to leaders across the military in my day job, because I think it is everything. It's everything as we try to tackle the challenges we face within organizations, the challenges we face, I mean, everything with innovation and creativity and connection and belonging. When you're trying to, you know, institute change in an organization, when you're trying to build teamwork within an organization, when you're trying to solidify trust, if we don't stop to address the fears and feelings, good or bad, that people may have when we are trying to lead an organization, then we will absolutely 100% spend an inordinate amount of time dealing with the ineffective and unproductive behavior of not addressing those fears and feelings. And it's not something that we as leaders talk about a lot, you know, the fears and feelings of people, at least not in my organization. And so of the organization writ large, I would say on my teams, we tend to talk a lot about feelings because it's just not something, it's not a language we've grown up with. It's not a behavior we've kind of grown up with. But when you are really able to sit down and be honest and have candid conversations about the way we are feeling at work, it just clears the path. And I think it expedites, when you can do that, it expedites the good direction. You very quickly are able to address ineffective, unproductive behavior. You get it out of the way, and it catapults you in the direction you want to go. It catapults trust. It catapults connection. It catapults, I think, courage in terms of creativity and innovation, like all the buzzwords. You get to actually experience them when you are comfortable addressing fears and feelings.
That's it's almost like the number one thing a leader should be focused on is feelings and fear, which makes me a little bit uncomfortable as a man in a stereotypical leader. How do you,
yeah.
I imagine these, you know, sitting in a circle and holding hands and talking about feelings. And I also pragmatically know that's probably not what happens. What does this look like as a leader for you?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And I think that's probably the reaction I get most, right? When I say we have to address our fears and feelings, people do think we're going to kind of sit down and hold hands and kumbaya, maybe some tears involved. it's the farthest thing from that. One of my favorite questions that Brené asks is, think about a time you've seen someone do something courageous. Think about any time that we ourselves have had to do something that maybe we weren't ready for, we felt really uncertain about. There was probably a healthy level of apprehension, anxiety, fear, doubt, and all of us at some point had to address those feelings to move forward. And so it's not about sitting down and baring our souls and crying and addressing feeling. It's about really understanding what feelings are getting in our own way. I love that quote, because it doesn't just apply to the team as a leader, it applies to me as the leader. And so I have to address my own fears and feelings as well. I'm gonna use the current COVID experience as an example.
Great.
You know, I had to, as I was leading a team, as we were adjusting and adapting to the COVID environment, right? As we sent people home to work, as we had to look at who on our team was living with a high-risk population, when we also had to look at the fact that our jobs are in national security, and we don't always get we don't have the same liberty to be able to work at home. So I had to bring some people in because the job of national security doesn't stop. And so I had to have some people in the office while I also had to do the best I could at protecting other members of my team who lived with high-risk populations. While I myself was dealing with the uncertainty of what COVID meant to my own, you know, my own loved ones, right? And so there were days where I really had to address their fears and feelings, and I had to be willing to sit down and hear their concerns, talk through what we were going to do as a team, talk through where we had to accept risks, talk through where we still felt really uncertain, while I myself was dealing with my own degree of fears and feelings of, am I doing the right thing? Am I doing enough? Am I making the right decisions? you know, that doubt, right? I couldn't let that doubt paralyze me in making a decision. I also couldn't let that doubt push too far in only dealing with the people side of it. I still had to deal with how are we going to be able to do the job we've been asked to do and do it effectively. There were days I was a little resentful that I too couldn't be home and that I was potentially subjecting myself, because we were coming to work every day, subjecting myself to a degree of risk, subjecting my loved ones to a certain degree of risk. And I couldn't get caught up in that. So on a daily basis, really, I was having to address the fears and feelings of what we were all experiencing. And what I kind of walked away from that experience with was it's a wave, right? And everybody's wave is timed differently. So there were some days where I was really processing my own uncertainty well, while maybe a member of my team wasn't processing their uncertainty well. And the challenge really came when our waves met and we both weren't processing that uncertainty well. And then the days where we were both processing it really well, things really clicked. And so it was really a constant awareness of we're all processing this at different ways at different times. And you have to just take a breath and be aware of that, so that you don't then create conflict. You don't create unnecessary stories that lead to conflict. You don't show up differently than you'd like to one day look back and show up. You showed up the way you wanted to. So you have to just constantly kind of be aware of it. And to be honest, like, some days you handle it better than others. Some days you're able to manage those fears and feelings better than you are on other days.
There's so much to unpack there. I really like the idea of everyone's on a different wave. And at least for me, often my worst leadership moments are when I'm at a peak or a trough and someone else is at the other side and I don't recognize that. I lead as if everybody's on the same wavelength.
Yes, yes. And everybody showed up differently, right? We all process uncertainty in different ways. And so being able to slow down enough and recognize that for some people that uncertainty meant pulling away, for other people processing that uncertainty meant really digging in and becoming a little more directive and authoritarian. We were all handling it differently, and what I didn't want was for there to be conflict, because we were all processing something that was new to all of us.
Right. And that time, it goes back to the quote that we started with: if you don't take the time to do that, then you're going to squander a lot of time on the back end, trying to clean up misunderstandings and things like that. So speaking of fear, there's a quote I love. I kind of want to just get a quick take on it from you, from Fritz Perls. And he says that fear is excitement without the breath, which you just mentioned, taking a moment to breathe. What are your thoughts on that quote?
Yeah, I've never heard it before. I certainly think fear can feel in your body, like excitement. I can understand that physiological experience. I don't know that I always see fear as exciting. I certainly see fear as telling me something, right? Like, the fear is meant to be a communicator to you. And I think the breath is important when we can slow down long enough to listen to it. To listen to it and then to check it, right? Because sometimes it's telling you something you really need to adhere to, you need to embrace, and sometimes it's a false narrative. And so taking the breath and being able to check either one of those, I think, is critical. And then recognizing the feeling you're having as, wow, maybe that is fear trying to tell me something.
Yeah, that's such a powerful thing to notice. I have fear. Is it excitement? Is it a warning of something really bad happening? it can mean a lot of different things. Wise words. Now, you say that fear isn't actually what gets in our way of doing hard things, but it's often the behaviors that we protect ourselves with. What are your? Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, I mean, that's all based on the work of you mentioned her earlier, Brené Brown, and in the Dare to Lead book, she talks about armored leadership. And so what it is it's not fear that gets in the way. It's the behaviors we exhibit, the behaviors we use to protect ourselves from that feeling of fear or risk or uncertainty or emotional exposure. I can tell you there's probably not a single day in my command journey. My first command experience was in Iraq. My second command experience was at the headquarters of the Air Force's nuclear enterprise. So I've certainly been in moments where the stakes were high and the pressure was high. And there probably wasn't a single day I didn't have some degree of fear. But you can't let that paralyze you. And the most bravest among us, the most courageous among us, they take that fear, they unpack it, they understand it, and they say, I'm going to do this, you know, I'm going to go forward anyway because I trust myself, because I know I can get up when I fall, because I have the right people in my corner, because what I'm doing matters. I think all too often we minimize that, oh, we're just afraid. That's not true. I think everybody's afraid. Everybody has doubt. It's what you do in the face of that fear and that doubt. It's the lessons you apply. It's the work you've done to understand yourself. It's the work you've done to fortify yourself and to strengthen those muscles of spirit and fortitude and direction. It's those things that help us go forward in the, you know, in a productive, healthy, courageous way.
That's so good. And we talk a lot in Care and Leadership about building character as a leader and just incremental steps. Do you have any tips or advice? Like, I love what you're telling me. I need to confront my fears and make meaning of them and move forward. But do you, like, at 8 a.m. think about this? Or how can I make it more actionable and operational?
Yeah. You know, I think I don't get up every morning going, what am I afraid of today? And let me overcome it. Usually it's what am I afraid of? I'm afraid of a morning with no coffee. But I've gotten, you know, we have to learn, I think as leaders, we have to learn to really slow down and listen to what our body is telling us, listen to the thoughts we're having, have the ability to check those thoughts. And so I think what has helped me most on a very practical level is when I'm asked to do something, if I feel resistance, if I feel frustration, if I feel fear, to stop and ask myself, what is this about? What is this feeling really about? What am I really afraid of? What else am I really afraid of? And where might the story be false? You know, I'm very lucky. I'm a product of a lot of amazing thought leaders, Byron Katie, Brené Brown. I used to love Wayne Dyer. And all of these thought leaders are really encouraging us to stop and get really honest about our thoughts, what they're telling us, and whether or not they're true. Where are we making up a narrative? That's why I love the coaching work, because the coaching work is really about unpacking a narrative, whether, you know, asking ourselves whether it's true or not, and then also helping us rewrite that narrative. I think building that muscle, building that skill set is one of, if not the most important things a leader can do. Having the ability to slow down long enough to really listen to your thoughts and then check them, because my experience has been is that, gosh, 80 to 90% of them are 80 to 90% of the negative stories that come up are false outright, just outright a lie.
Wow, that's a beautiful action item. Just if then I feel resistance, stop and think about it. And for the listeners, I just want to clarify, Dee Dee graciously said she would talk about this topic. I'm not going to just spring it on her, but currently I'm reading White Fragility, which is a tough read as a white man and an important one. And in America today, I think anyone who's white probably has this, you know, resistance moment, and maybe it's time to slow down and think about it. What is your advice or thoughts on how do we talk about systemic racism in the U.S. and with our team and as leaders?
Yeah, so I'm gonna be very honest about my race so that listeners kind of have the context for where I'm coming from. I'm a white female, and so I think I still have a ton to learn about race, about having this conversation. But I had an experience a couple years ago that has made me really passionate about how we have this conversation, given the other work with Dr. Brown and the coaching I've done. So about 3 years ago now, I had a team of 6 squadron commanders, and the Air Force was struggling with race then as well. We had had a report come out that said we give a disproportionately higher number of disciplinary actions to our black members. And I knew this was a story we needed to talk about because, you know, we need to just like we're seeing today, by not having the conversation, by not addressing the fears and feelings that are happening in communities, we are dealing with ineffective and unproductive behavior in some cases, right? That's not to apply that peaceful protest is ineffective and unproductive. I think that's the right way. But when we see violence, like that's not helpful in changing a conversation. But it happens because we're not addressing these things that have happened over centuries, right? Hundreds of years of mistreatment and Anyway, so we were having this conversation. So I said to my squadron commanders, I really want you to have this conversation. And so I just kind of left it at that. I sent them the public affairs guidance, and I said, here you go. Go have this conversation with your teams. And each of them had a team about 200 to 300. And so about a month goes by, and I'm talking to various members of our team at the mid-level and enlisted level. And I said to them, what did you all think when your squadron commanders had this conversation with you about our disciplinary rates? And they all just kind of looked at me like none of them had had that conversation. So I went back and I talked to my squadron commanders and I said, you know, I asked you to have this conversation with your organization and you didn't. What happened? And one of my commanders spoke up first and she said, you know, ma'am, I've been trying to have this, you know, I want to have this conversation, but there's so many questions I don't know the answer to. There's so many questions left unanswered through the guidance that the Air Force sent out that I don't know how to get in front of my organization and talk to them when there's so many things we don't have the answers to. And I said, okay. And then my second commander spoke up and he was in law enforcement. And we've certainly seen that is a thread in this narrative of law enforcement against the black community. And he's a white guy in law enforcement, right? So he said, I've been trying to have this conversation with friends on Facebook, and I've said some things wrong because I've lost some friends. I've had some friends, you know, unfriend me. And he said, and I've said some things wrong, and my concern is I'm going to go into my squadron, and I, too, am going to say things wrong there. And, you know, I don't know how to have the conversation. And I think a lot of us can relate to that. Like, how do we, there's so much hurt, there's so much anger, rightly so. And so how do we sit down and have this conversation? I'm grateful for books like White Fragility, because I think it's starting to give us a language. And then my third commander spoke up and he said, you know, ma'am, I'm a black man. And I don't know how to walk into my squadron without them immediately thinking I have an agenda, that I am biased toward the black members in my squadron. And it was a moment that I will cherish forever because it was a moment I realized that every single one of them wanted to have this conversation, but they themselves had one area that was holding them back. And so by recognizing what was the one thing that was holding them back, we could have a conversation that helped take that vulnerability, right? They all felt vulnerable in one unique way. For one, it was information. For one, it was a language. And for the other, for the third one, it was a, you know, an understanding of bias. And so we had a really great conversation. And I said to the one, you know, to Jen, the first commander, I said, what if you went into your squadron and you said, listen, this story is out there. We've got to have this conversation. I have so many questions, just like you. I'm sure you too have so many questions. There's so much the Air Force doesn't know right now. It's trying to figure this out. It's trying to understand this. So I'm going to stand here with you today, and I'm going to take all your questions until we've covered it all, and I will do everything I can to get you those answers. And then I said to the second commander, what if you go into your squadron and you say, listen, I've been trying to have this conversation on Facebook, but I've said some things wrong. I don't even know what I've said that is wrong. But I know it's important that we have this conversation today. So can we have this conversation while giving each other some grace and to know that we all have the best of intention in trying to have this conversation? Because we can't let this divide us. We can't let this separate us from our communities. We have to be able to have this conversation. And then for the third commander, what if you go into your squadron and just like you did here today, you say, I'm a black man, which means some of you are going to think I'm biased toward a particular part of this squadron, a particular part of our team. The reality is we all have biases, but unless we can talk about those biases openly, unless we can talk about the things that concern us, we'll never be able to get past this conversation. And so why I love that and why I think it's so important that we give leaders the skills to understand where they themselves feel risk, uncertainty, and emotional exposure, as Dr. Brown would put it. If we can give leaders the ability to understand that themselves, you get to take that very thing and make it your superpower to connection. When all of those commanders walked in, and they shared with their organizations why they thought this conversation was hard to have, they were showing a degree of vulnerability. They were showing a degree of humanness, of authenticity, the degree that actually connects us, right? That authenticity, that humanness, and that vulnerability is what connects us to the people we lead. And so by going in and sharing that thing that initially held them back, it then became the very thing that connected them and opened up the space to have those conversations in a way that they were comfortable with. We don't have these conversations because we're uncomfortable, and so we avoid them, or we go in them really uncomfortable and really mess them up. But if we can acknowledge why we ourselves are uncomfortable, that actually becomes such a foundational superpower.
Yeah, that awareness of what's going on in us becomes our superpower. And just to point out, it took courage that eventually I would gather that all your commanders had that conversation. It took courage for you as a leader to put your foot down. It would have been easy to say, oh, well, they didn't have the conversations, I'll just kind of wait it out and see what happens. And having that conversation instead of just waiting it out meant a lot, I think, for the command and for your commanders. And
well,
I can't
you.
Believe how half an hour goes. It's I wish we could have another half hour here. But
well, you just say when I'm there.
Yeah, perfect. Didi, you're an incredible leader by all accounts. You have a wealth of experience, and it sounds like you're thinking about retiring in the next 6 to 12 months, which means you'll be up for grabs either for your own work and with other leaders or working for someone else. Curious what's on the horizon for you and how people excited to connect with you should do so.
Well, thank you. Yes, I do plan on transitioning into the the civilian world, leave the military. I'm not quite sure yet what I'm doing, but anyone is welcome to connect with me on LinkedIn, and then they can follow the adventure and see where it goes.
I look forward to that myself. Last question, just quickly, what would you say is the most important piece of advice you could give a person at any level of leadership who wants to reach their fullest potential as a leader?
Oh, I would say courage is contagious. And the more you can build the skill set yourself, the more you give others permission to do the same. And the more you take small, courageous steps, the more you build that muscle so that you have it when that big courage is needed. It is certainly contagious and it's exponential. It's infinite. You can build it.
Wow. Courage is contagious. I love that. Didi, thank you so much for being our leader on the show today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. That is our show for today. A special thanks to all the listeners around the world. The show will be back again for another Women Lead Radio, Mondays at 9 a.m., Fridays at 2 p.m. It has been my sincere pleasure to be your host today. Thanks for listening. Keep exploring, pushing boundaries, and leading on the edge.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where like-focused business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.